Welcome to the Unfiltered Podcast with me, special guest host Dr. Johnny Rees, and powered by Ultimate Performance, the world's premier personal training experience that delivers maximum results in minimum time. In each episode of the Unfiltered Podcast, we speak to the most respected, celebrated, and controversial experts in the fields of health, fitness, nutrition, well-being, and performance to help you find the life-changing advice you need to live smarter. Remember, you can find all our exclusive Unfiltered documentaries, video interviews, and investigations at unfilteredonline.com and the Unfiltered Extra YouTube channel. And now, on with the show. I am here today with Ali Gilbert. Ali is known as the Queen of Men's Health and comes very highly recommended by some extremely impressive people. So, Ali, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Johnny. I'm doing great. I am honored to be here. And the guys that we were speaking on offline, love them. You've got a great network, great people.
Yeah, well, it's your network more than mine. But I'm really excited to dig in because I think there's so much interesting information that you have. And I think the way that you deliver it is very memorable as well. So I reckon our viewers and listeners are going to get a lot out of this one. And we cover a lot of really timely topics. So with that kind of big preamble, I was just wondering, how did you become known as the Queen of Men's Health? I mean, that's an interesting start. How did that come about?
So I didn't nickname myself that. I honestly cannot remember who nicknamed me that, but someone was like, you have to put that in your IG bio. And I was like, done. And then it just stuck because for all I know and for what a lot of people know, I'm the only female who's talking a lot about this topic. So that basically is my tagline, I guess. So I am by trade a strength and conditioning coach. Like I went to school for it and everything. And then when I graduated, like a lot of us, we want to work with athletes. And then you realize, yeah, you don't make a lot of money, especially if you're just in the collegiate area and stuff like that. So my hometown of Greenwich, Connecticut had a lot of guys who played golf, and I worked at a gym there, and I was like, oh, all these guys are playing golf and they take it really seriously. I should learn about golf. I didn't know anything. I played soccer in college, and I was like, I'm going to take lessons with the golf pros in the area, and then I'll barter with them and train them. And I dove into the Titleist Performance Institute, which has a golf fitness certification. Like, who knew? And I was like, well, shit, this is a sport. These guys take it seriously. They can afford to train. This is going to be my thing. And I became known as the golf fitness specialist in Greenwich. And over time, I realized it brought me an all male clientele. And a lot of these guys would obviously want to hit the ball farther and play better and all that stuff. But then they'd start asking, you know, like, how do I get abs? Or, you know, I want to fill out my shirt and stuff like that. And they'd be taking random like test boosters off the shelf, and they knew nothing about nutrition. And I was like, well, shit, nobody's attacking this. So I started learning everything I could about men's health, men's hormones, stuff like that. And this is like circa 2008 to 2012. And then one of my business coaches at the time, Tom Plummer, he was like, there's something here. Just keep posting about the men's health stuff. Just stick with that. Don't even talk about women. Just let's angle it that way. And then fast forward, here we are. And I've attended many medical conferences, spoken at them, built a network of physicians, and just basically learned as much as I could about men's hormones and physiology so I could speak the language. And I love it. And I joke that like I do men's health because I have daddy issues and I want that validation. But we all have childhood trauma, right? So, but it really does fulfill what I feel is my purpose in life, and to be able to change people's lives and allow guys a platform to speak openly on topics that they sometimes would get dismissed on, or it's, you know, so highly stigmatized with this world. So, so here we are.
Absolutely. I mean, so you touched on so many interesting things there, but I mean, when you lay it out like that, it actually seems quite logical to go, you know, from right. Golf to, you know, it makes sense. So I guess the first thing I'd like to ask you about, and this is a very broad question, but testosterone,
Before we get to TRT, optimizing hormones, guys who are looking to kind of optimize their hormones generally, but say testosterone specifically, you know, given who I'm talking to, what are the kind of big rocks here? Like, what are the main, or to put it another way, what are the main mistakes that you see guys doing when they're trying to optimize their hormones?
So a lot of them get confused because they'll look stuff up online, and online will have conflicting opinions everywhere. And that's with anything. Like, if you have a cold and you look it up, you're going to die and then have, you know, like explosive diarrhea, like all this stuff. Yeah. So they're looking in the wrong places, but that's not their fault. And then there's a lot of guys that read Reddit or certain forums, and then they're kind of on the other side of the pendulum where, like, oh, I need all the things in order to optimize my testosterone, when it really comes down to what is your lifestyle like? It is so fucking boring, but nobody wants to talk about it. And I'm like, all right, you're trying to optimize your testosterone. You're in the gym. How hard are you training? What are you eating? Are you overweight? Are you doing any cardio? Because guys are afraid of that because they think their muscles will fall off. And are you actually taking care of the things that you need to in the rest of your life, not just thinking, oh, I need to inject this or take this pill to be able to get to where I want to be? And they're also told by conflicting sources that the range of normal testosterone is they're fine, they're okay, they don't need testosterone. So they're very confused. And I think a lot of it stems from sedentary lifestyle.
Yeah. Hello. So if people are, yeah, I totally see that. And often just, you know, people, if they go from 30% body fat to not even shredded, like 15% body fat, that'll really improve not just their testosterone, their whole hormonal profile, you know, insulin resistance and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. But that's very hard to do. And, you know, it's a big effort, and sometimes it's insurmountable to these guys, especially if they do suffer from low T, but they don't really have that motivation or drive or anything. But if you have body fat to lose, which we consider, like, if you're 20% or over, you probably would benefit from dropping body fat because your body's going to be inflamed and it's not going to want to produce testosterone. And if you add testosterone exogenously to a body that does not want it, that causes a bunch of other side effects. And so then guys are like, well, testosterone's scary. It didn't work for me. You know, I tried it for a month or whatever. And they're really not taking care of the things that they have to outside of looking at a pharmaceutical, which is a very safe, very good one. But still, you have to do the work even if you do take TRT.
Yeah. So that brings me on to a really interesting point here that I've heard you talk about: GPP for TRT. So I'll let you explain what is that, and you know, well, what is that exactly?
So GPP stands for General Physical Preparation. It's a term in the fitness industry, but I kind of adopted it because basically so many guys were looking for the best way to eat, the best way to train, to optimize testosterone. And I was like, you know what? There has to be some sort of like plug and play approach for this, because all the dudes in our coaching business go through some sort of variation of this. And I adopted it from my coach, Luke Lehman. He came up with this continuum that he takes people through, where the initial phase is probably opposite of what every man wants to do. High reps, a lot of unilateral work, a lot of low level aerobic cardio that is higher volume, and low carb. So no one wants to do that. So no one's going to do what's really necessary or hard for them because it's not enjoyable. However, it's very necessary. So the phases start with an approach like that if someone has a lot of body fat to lose. And then they transition into more hypertrophy, more lower reps, heavy shit, like stuff guys like. And then they get away from all the cardio and it's maybe more interval work. And then it progresses to a lot of the heavy strength stuff. And then it's just a cycle of strength and hypertrophy forever. And then you kind of cycle the nutrition around that. And so I've laid out 6 months because that's basically how long I think it takes to really see somewhat of a real transformation without crash dieting and without dropping muscle and stuff like that. So I've nicknamed it GPP for TRT because if you get a guy super resilient, leaner, all of that, he's like primed to go on testosterone. But this program can be for guys already on TRT, which we utilize a lot in our coaching as well. So it doesn't mean that, oh, I'm already on testosterone, I can't do this program. You actually can, and you would benefit a lot from it.
And as you said, everything will work better. Well, A, if you're leaner and, you know, as you said, more cardiovascularly fit and everything like that. People will often think of TRT as a sort of panacea, as something that's going to solve, you know, all their problems. So I suppose this brings me on to my next question. And I've just given you one, but what are the biggest misconceptions around TRT? So, you know, what do you encounter or what are the myths that you dispel for people a lot?
You hit on one being a panacea. Similar to thinking that this anabolic steroid will make me jacked, Ozempic's just going to make me lean, testosterone's going to turn me into this jacked, lean, veiny, vascular statue. And I'm like, it could, but you kind of have to lift and eat and all the things we just mentioned. So that's one of them. The stigmatizations surrounding it are that it's going to cause heart attacks, it's going to cause cancer, it's going to cause roid rage. They're going to lose their hair. They're going to get a ton of acne. They're going to be considered on steroids. So there's a lot of things that are associated with it. A lot of those things have been refuted. There's tons of research now showing low T is actually a huge risk factor for all-cause mortality in guys, especially heart attacks, especially cancer. So having and living with low testosterone leads to a lower quality of life that really sets these guys up for something nasty to come across later in life. And when they realize that a lot of that research is still out there, but it's been debunked from, you know, in the past, it's finding the right practitioner to help them navigate that and understand that if they do want to go on testosterone, this actually could be life-saving and life-changing for them. So that's really the big ones that guys struggle with. So
there's so many things I want to pick up on there. But I suppose the first one, just to underline your point, is I've had academic debates with people, given my background, middle-aged academic, you know, professors essentially who are 40 pounds overweight, and they'll say stuff like, well, if I took steroids, I'd be running the 100 meters in under 10 seconds. It's like, yeah. No, I was an athlete and I could take all the drugs in the world and Usain Bolt could not train and he'd still beat me. Like people have, anybody could do that if they took that. And you just think, yeah, okay, sure. Like do it. And then, you know, come back to me.
That drives me crazy. Like there's a clip from when I was on Mark Bell and I was talking about how guys say like, you know, oh, I've been on TRT for 3 months. I'm not jacked yet. And there's a lot of layers to that because number one, again, if you're the type of person where you go to the gym maybe twice a week, your diet's shit, you don't really know what you're eating, and then you inject testosterone, you're not going to look that way. And of course, all these trolls come at me and they're like, well, there's a study that shows, okay, there's one study that shows injecting 600 milligrams, which is not TRT, doesn't matter. And I think these guys sat on a couch and then they grew some muscle. That's great. That's great. I don't care. Okay. You're going to point out the one thing that literally you think is true. Cool. Look at the rest of Earth. Obviously, there's tons of guys that are on testosterone that you wouldn't even know. And if they sit on a couch, inject testosterone, inject anabolic steroids, they will gain weight. Because obviously that brings with it a lot of water weight and androgens cause weight as well. But again, you're not going to morph into how you look. Like there's a reason professional bodybuilders who are on tons of stuff look the way they do because they're in the gym, like they're bodybuilding. And I don't know, it was just really funny because I was like, why is everyone like trying to refute what I'm saying? Because it's true. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't met anybody who has sat on a couch only and injected all this stuff. If anyone wants to volunteer for that study, be my guest, report back to me and show me photos before and after so that we can prove.
And yeah, I totally agree. And it's also, you mentioned a really important point to highlight, I suppose, early on. Bodybuilders, that when people think of Mr. Olympia, that's grams, not milligrams, right?
Yeah.
That the dosages are completely different. And it's TRT, as you've just said, right? Testosterone replacement therapy. And we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but essentially it's a treatment. It is replacing what we should ideally be producing, right? So yeah. Physiological versus, you know, super physiological. The camera's not wide enough to get there, but you know what I mean? It's not. So I think that's a very big misconception. And everybody loves to cherry pick one isolated study, right?
Yes.
And then the preponderance of the evidence all indicates, you know, to the contrary. So are there any other kind of myths you'd like to dispel or any other? We've covered most of them, I think.
I think that's most of them. I think, you know, a lot of them, the one thing that I will say maybe is not a myth, but that a lot of guys struggle with is that they have to be on it for life. And I didn't understand that at first because I'm like, yo, you're going to feel better. Like, do it. Nobody that we've coached who's gone on TRT has been like, I feel worse. This is not for me. I'm going to come off. But I understand as a man, like to rely on something else is a mental struggle. But once they can get over that, to put it gently, then it's like so many things can be life-changing for them. So, you know, we'll talk them through that. And if they're not mentally ready, then it's fine. And I also tell them, listen, if you do go on and you come off, it's not like you're going to drop dead. Like nothing super bad is going to happen. You're just not going to feel so good.
Yeah, I think, and people also will, I suppose, look at bodybuilders who've retired and stuff like that. But that's not really what we're talking about with TRT, right? We sort of covered that, these super physiological doses and a lot of that. And as you said, like if you stop taking it, then yeah, it's not suddenly going to be. And I think another thing people need to remember is that like TRT is a great treatment for type 2 diabetes, for example, right? So we'll talk about this a bit more later, but just while we're on the subject of kind of TRT and coming on, you know, starting to take it essentially. This is a bit of a loaded question, but do you think that eventually taking TRT is inevitably going to be the best option for a man, whether that's, you know, 32 or 72? Do you think that, you know, inevitably it's going to be the thing to do?
I do. Yeah. And I've quoted myself in talks where I put up a slide and I say, testosterone replacement is inevitable for every man and every man should and probably will end up on TRT, just because the range has lowered because men are showing up with lower and lower levels. And we've seen how it's really improving quality of life. Do we have hundreds of years of research on it? Not yet, but it is proving to be one of the safest things a man can take. So I think that the fact that like there's tons of other pharmaceuticals that advertise, at least in the US, the side effects are like you're going to shit your pants and you're going to maybe fall into a coma. No one's afraid of that, but they're afraid of like the things that might happen with testosterone, which are very unlikely.
We've kind of talked around it a little bit, but there's certainly a bit of a stigma around testosterone, which doesn't exist around other medical treatments, other drugs, you know, Ozempic, semaglutide, that is a sort of quite a good example, along with things like statins and blood pressure drugs that people are quite happy to take for years on end without an issue. But why do people kind of balk at the thought of taking testosterone when it doesn't make sense, really?
Yeah. Well, even like thyroid hormone, right? People will go on thyroid and not think anything of it. Like you're literally on thyroid hormone probably the rest of your life if you have issues. And no one's like, oh, I'm taking steroids because it's not an anabolic hormone. But our buddy Rick Collins has said many times how a lot of this stigmatization started from when the Steroid Act in 1990 came about and it completely demonized testosterone as cheating in professional sports and all of that. So people associate it with cheating. Oh, this is the cheating drug, even though Ozempic is not. Like I've actually posted about that because people get on people about, oh, testosterone's cheating. I'm like, cool. How? Because you're running, like tripping over grandmothers to the pharmacy to get Ozempic because you can't stop yourself from eating. Like, how does that make any sense? And poor men are suffering because their peers or people who just don't understand are giving them a hard time for taking something that can save their life. Ozempic can be life-changing for somebody who absolutely needs it. Diabetics, people have absolutely transformed, all of that stuff. But it, just because you can't diet because you get hungry and it's hard, come on.
Yeah, I mean, that raises a whole sort of separate set of problems that we might talk about earlier. But it's also a really direct example. People don't seem to have an issue with women going on HRT, right?
No, no one blinks an eye. Totally yeah. Normal, menopause, whatever.
Even encouraged, right?
Yeah, totally. It's crazy. And it's like, you know, woman going through menopause. A man going through andropause, like, that's not talked about. Like, women make jokes all the time. Women talk about it socially. They're just like, oh, you know, menopause or a menopausal or all this stuff. Guys aren't like, yeah, I'm andropausal. So you don't hear about that.
No, I mean, it's interesting, but it's so true. And it's funny because it is so true. I mean, I wasn't going to tackle this until later, but do you think that being a woman in a sort of, I was going to say a woman in a man's world, but that's horribly sexist. Do you think being a woman gives you a certain advantage in talking about these things?
First of all, I would not be offended if you said that, because a lot of people are like, oh, what's it like being in a male-dominated industry? And there's different ways that I look at this. So first of all, I do a lot of speaking engagements. There's a lot of places that I speak at. And continuously throughout my career, there have been women who have been like, there should be more women. There should be more women. I'm like, then fucking step up and apply or ask to speak. Like, nobody's stopping you. You have to bring something to the table. I would never want to be chosen just because I'm a woman and I'm going to fill this, you know, quota of having a diverse speaking, like, set of speaker, whatever. Yeah. So, I don't like that view, but that's another topic for another day. So I've never like seen myself as like the only female in a lot of these events. I honestly am very like bro-y, and I consider myself one of the guys. Like, one of my clients was actually talking about this at the Silverback Summit because someone brought up women coaching men. And I was like, Chad, why do you work with me? And he's like, well, you're jacked and I just consider you like one of the dudes. And I was like, exactly. So I relate to guys a lot easier, just I think because of my athletic background, and I'm not really into girly things. Even though I'm straight. So I think people think, oh, well, if you're a lesbian, then maybe that makes sense. But like, I'm not, nothing against that. I just relate to guys better just because of that background. And so I find it easier to talk to them. So that in itself allows the approachability to me. But also, I think because I'm a woman and I have that empathetic side, that guys open up very easily. And so I just talk to them about it very openly. I don't dance around it. I'm not cryptic. I'm not like, so do you feel, you know, I'm more like, all right, any sexual performance issues? Because they don't get asked these things in a way that would allow them to actually talk about it and not be judged and not be thought of a certain type of way. So for me, I find it very easy. And I've never felt like I've been denied an opportunity because I'm a female. You know, maybe if somebody's not comfortable because I am a female, then that's fine. I probably wouldn't know because they wouldn't be attracted to what my content is about or want to be on my email list or something like that. So, but I'm an equal opportunity friend. So, you know, I'll be friends with anybody as long as they're, you know, not a dick bag.
Yeah. And I think, and you've just given a good example. Like, you have a very good way of diffusing potentially awkward situations with comedy, right? And the fact that you are kind of prepared to talk about it, but you can do it in a sort of tongue-in-cheek way without being terribly serious. I think that really helps people open up.
Me too. I love, you know, Jay Faruja does this, and he's given me a lot of advice with it, where he watches stand-up comedy and studies it. And I do the same thing because, just like you said, the delivery of this type of material can't be super strict and serious all the time. Like, you get that enough from a doctor or, you know, somebody who has to follow certain restrictions. And so I'm very unfiltered, as you know, but I think it does diffuse any reason for somebody to feel weird about it, or at least I don't want them to feel weird about it. So I do make a lot of jokes about it. I do use a lot of memes, a lot of humor, you know, like guys' balls, if they shrink on testosterone, like I make memes out of that so that they're like, oh, okay, this is like common. People talk about it. So yeah, it's fun. And hopefully one day I'll be just as good as these stand-up comedians, but I'm totally not there yet.
Matt, I think you do a very good job. And also, you know, you do have, it's important for people to remember that you do actually, you've spoken at medical conferences. You've done this for a long time. You've worked very closely with doctors for years, right? You were doing blood tests back, what, 12, 13 years ago, before a lot of the telehealth, you know, stuff wasn't so prevalent and wasn't even, you know, regulated as much, right?
Yeah. So, like the real way I got into this, not like my story was fake, but there's a doctor in Greenwich, Connecticut named Dr. Carlin Kolker. He used to write for Muscular Development. He worked with Shaq and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, this guy's in my hometown. And I literally like emailed him. I'm like, hi, can I come hang out with you? And he actually went to my gym. So I was like, yo, this guy's a savage. Like he's jacked and all that stuff. And so I went to his office and he's like, how can I help you? And I was like, I just want to learn everything that you know. And so he put me through his process, hormone testing and how he goes about treating people and stuff like that. And I was like, all right, I need to start to get to know multiples of you around town, because back then telehealth wasn't like a thing. Because this is like 2010, 2009. And so
that long ago. Yeah. Because
yeah, it was a long time ago.
A lot of the telehealth stuff, right? But yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, completely. So I started just talking to different doctors, like naturopaths and GPs and specialists, and like, how do you guys go about this? And what do you see? And how can I learn from them? Because there was no material on this. And I partnered with a doctor in 2012 where we sold specialty blood work. So like hormone panels, telomere testing, Dutch testing, like all those things, because they still didn't have that online. And then when that was for sale online, I divested from the company because I was like, you know what? I don't feel right about charging people a premium when they can get it online. And so it was a great learning experience because I got to sit in on a lot of consults. I learned from the doctor that I partnered with, you know, a lot of different angles in the form of treatment, and then podcasts, and then medical courses like Neil Ruzier. I took his course. I went to A4M. I spoke at AMMG. I've just consulted with a lot of physicians. So people ask, like a lot of coaches ask, how do I learn what you learn? And I'm like, you just have to literally pay to play, basically pay for people's service, go through their process and learn what they do. And now there's like tons of content on YouTube and everything. And it's just sifting through what's bullshit and what's not. But you learn that quite quickly. And now I'm very happy to have my own event so that people can actually learn what they really want to learn, which is a lot of the truth and how things are actually done in a lot of these practices, versus a medical organization that kind of restricts what you can talk about and you have to give up any conflicts of interest and stuff like that. So long way around that. It wasn't like an overnight thing, or, you know, last year I just decided I want to do this. It did involve quite a bit of work, and I don't feel like I'm there yet. I still have so much to learn. And luckily, I'm surrounded by a fantastic network of professionals, both physicians and other types, so that I can refer people to them. Because at one point, I was the one like looking at the blood work. And then I'm like, we got to manage this somehow, you know, and of course, there's physicians going to be like, your trainer said this, like on paper, it just looks so awful. And it's illegal. So
there is that. And yeah. I mean, you just mentioned it there, but you've had enormous success with the Silverback Summit. So I was wondering if you could tell me just a little bit about that while we're kind of on the subject.
Sure. That's my men's health event that we ran this year for the second time in November. And it started out as an idea based off interactions with guys in a TRT group that I'm a moderator in on Facebook. And I was like, these guys have so many questions and they don't know where to go. And the physicians in the group were the same guys I have speak at Silverback, more evolved, doing things that maybe standard conventional medicine frowned upon in terms of TRT. And I was like, why don't we just meet somewhere? Because this was like 2020. And I was like, people are itching to like get out. And I was like, we should have an event. And subsequently, I had applied to other medical organizations to speak on some of these things. And they were like, no, we're good. We have that covered. They didn't have that covered. You know, we're not looking for this type of material at this time. And I'm just like, all right, I've gotten denied four times. I'm just going to make up my own event. And the first year we did it, we had 35 guys and they loved it. And I was like, got to do it again. So we quadrupled our attendance this year. We had 140 people. It was a blast. And we cover everything from testosterone replacement to physiological issues in guys, fitness, nutrition, psychedelics, mental health, business, sexual performance. I even had a sex toy company sponsor it as one of our sponsors because that was stuff that guys talk about, but they never talk about. And people loved them. Like, I asked them, I'm like, so as a sponsor for you guys, like, how did this go over? Beyond Delights is the company if you guys want. And they're so on brand because they make toys that are not made with toxic plastics and chemicals and stuff, which we'll get into later. But they pride themselves on really serving a purpose. And they're like, Allie, you gave us a purpose, like just being here. And the men that went up to them were telling them how grateful they were to talk about some of the stuff that they were selling. And I was like, why do you think that they felt so comfortable? And they're like, you're on stage talking about us like at every break and making it so normalized that they just felt comfortable coming up. And they're like, hey, I tried this with my wife the other night, you know, blah, 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 because some guys traveled with their wives. And so I was like, you know what? This makes me feel really good that we can provide that environment. But the overwhelming theme from the feedback was that guys were like, I made friends. I was around other people that see things that like the way that I do. I wasn't judged at all. I actually learned exactly what I wanted to learn, like the truth around the cardiac stuff, the prostate cancer stuff, like all of that. So, I mean, I can go on and on.
No, and I mean, just to add, the caliber of the speakers that you got was really impressive, especially as you said, for an event that hadn't been running for that long. So I guess that's testament to you and testament to the need for this kind of conference, especially covering it in your unique way. Just quickly tell us. So what is the next one?
We're actually working on that date right now in November for next year, hopefully like the week of the 12th, 13th, 14th. I don't know when the weekend falls. So as soon as we get the dates locked in, I'm going to let you guys know. It's just a slow process.
Yeah, please do. Because that's one of the things. I remember I'm not a big social media guy, but seeing my social media and so many of the people that I was interested in hearing from were all at this one event. It's like, hang on, when is Rick Collins at the same event as Jay Faruja? And like, I just think it's a really cool thing that people Thank should you. Definitely check out. So while we're on the subject of kind of you personally, of Allie Gilbert, I'm asking as someone who has recently, had a foray into social media and, you know, doing these podcasts and all that sort of stuff and dealing with detractors, dealing with, you know, haters or people who will criticize you. And I'd just like to say first off that it's a lot harder to actually go out and create than it is to be the person consuming and, you know, sitting there watching it. So first off with that, but I think you have, whereas I might get angry and say, well, they'd never say that to my face or something, like you have a really good way of diffusing it and it helps that you're funny. But I'm just wondering how you kind of think about this and, you know, any strategies that you've developed.
Sure. I think similar to many fitness professionals, I deal with massive body dysmorphia because as soon as you've gotten extremely lean, anything above that is obese to you. So that's number one. Number two, I have a unique look. So I have a platinum buzz cut right now. I had a blonde faux hawk before last week, right? And I have muscles, which is not normal for most women, right? So that alone is something that makes me stand out like a sore thumb. Like anytime someone sees a blonde with a faux hawk, they take a picture and send to me because not a lot of us have it. Unless you go to a Pink concert, which I saw so many women with faux hawks and I was like, oh, I feel like among my people, like this is great. But I think realizing that if you're going to achieve or experience any type of success in the public eye, that it's just inevitable that someone's just going to not like something about you. And I had prepared myself for this, so I thought, but when I was on the Mark Bell podcast in July, when one of those clips dropped, I was actually going to the gym. It was deadlift day. And you know, they made me a collaborator and I was like, oh, cool. I was like, oh, my makeup looks really good. Like, I'm excited how I look because I'm, of course, hypercritical of any video, photo, whatever. And then all of a sudden, all the notifications of the trolls were rolling in and I was like, oh, my God. And they're like, you know, I was talking, the clip had me saying I was talking about how I've been on TRT for 2 years. And it was like, yeah, we could tell. Oh, no shit. And you look like a man. And who's this guy? And blah, blah, blah. And I was like, these people are vicious. And I was like, fuck. That was like a 4-hour deadlift session because it just was like nonstop. And I knew subconsciously this was coming because that was the biggest platform to date that I'd been on. But man, I didn't think these guys were that fucking vicious. And I was like, I don't even know how to respond. Do I respond? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like showing my friends. And so they start going at some of the trolls. And a lot of them were calling me Jay Cutler. They're like, oh, Jay Cutler looks really good these days. You know, oh, hey, it's Jay Cutler or Jay Cutler's sister, blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, you know what? There's two options here. First option is I can shrink myself down, not post stuff because then they can't attack me like this. Or I can realize it has a lot to do with them. It has less to do with me. They're obviously deeply hurt, deeply insecure. There's something very polarizing about a female talking about what they feel they should know and what they feel maybe themselves should be talking about on a platform like that. I can just keep going with my purpose because the men who appreciate me getting the word on this stuff out there far, far exceeds these idiots commenting who literally are just a waste of time to try to go at. Like sometimes I'll go back at them and I'm like, you know, I'm so sorry that you feel so hurt to come after somebody that you don't know. And of course they're never like, oh, I'm so sorry. They're just like, wow, you're wrong and blah, blah, blah. And so I started posting photos of like my coach Luke Lehman looks like John Cena. And so I started posting photos of Jay Cutler with John Cena. And I was like, yo, it's me and Luke at a party. Like, and it just kind of took off. So I don't know when this is coming out, but I actually, when I was in LA and I did a podcast with Mike O'Hearn, I was telling him, I was like, yo, everyone calls me Jay Cutler. And he did a story and he was like, I am here with Jay Cutler. And he tagged Jay and stuff like that. So I made him a t-shirt with the photo of us, like the two of us that says like Cutler and O'Hearn album dropping 2024. I'm going to send it to him for Christmas next week. But I was like, you know, there's no other way other than to just like have self-deprecating humor over it because it's funny. And I actually got to meet Jay at the Olympia and took a picture with him. I'm like, yo, I got your hair. Everyone calls me you. If I'm as jacked as you, then I mean, I guess that's a compliment, you know? So stuff like that. But what people don't realize is it can sting and it really gives me a new appreciation for online bullying and, you know, making fun of the way people look and stuff like what value does that provide to your life? Like to tear somebody down, does that really make you feel that much better? And I think to some extent, we're all guilty of it because we see something online. We're like, what the fuck? But again, context matters as well as like, you can think all those things. You can be as judgmental as you want, but it's really not necessary to say it.
I totally agree. I mean, all of that is, and it's very insightful, especially for me. And I suppose one thing, you mentioned all the cyberbullying and that sort of thing. You and I are perhaps lucky that, you know, can you imagine dealing with that as a 12-year-old or as a 14-year-old, right?
That's what I thought of.
And totally. And like, at least you're making a success of your life, right? What if you were just kind of starting out? You know, at least you have these clear, you know, there are all sorts of people that are very interested in hearing from you. And, you know, you have this big reputation. So it's funny that, you know, I bet all those people who are coming after you on the internet, you've never heard of, they don't have a profile picture. It's illiterate emails, illiterate comments. And yeah, I think it's, but it's important to remember that though, right? So it doesn't get you down.
Yeah. And that's what I like. It was a dark couple days just because it was like this ambush. And I was like, man, but it got like 15,000 likes. There's over 1,200 comments. Like, obviously, it was very high for engagement. So I'm like, keep going. Cause then the trolls started arguing with each other. Cause like, then they go off on these stupid topics and everything. And I'm just like, all right, keep at it, you know? And now, like, the way I deal with it is, it's all the same comments of my appearance and stuff, which was my worst nightmare. Like, literally my deepest insecurity has come to life. Like, I'm telling you guys right now, what I feared the most came to life. People calling me these names and saying how I look. I think if somebody called me fat, that would even be worse, because that's always been a fear of mine. So that's that whole vulnerable side of, like, you know, yeah, we can have bulletproof armor on and say that, you know, it bounces off of us. It does get easier over time. I will say, like, that was great and necessary for me to go to, because now when people comment this stuff, it does bounce off a lot easier. And it's like, who's this dude? Who's this like, okay, dude, can you come up with like different insults? At least
be original. Yeah.
I mean, exactly. Fuck. And the thing is too, like, if I were super skinny and had long blonde hair, people would be like, well, how is she qualified to talk about getting jacked and men's health stuff? And it's like, bro, I lift more than you. Like, come on. So
on that, I was super impressed. I saw you doing pull-ups with 80 pounds. So for British people, that's what, close to 40 kilos. I can't do that at the moment. So that genuinely impressive stuff. And some of your other lifts at 125 pounds or whatever you weigh are, you know, pretty impressive. So you're probably stronger. Well, you're way stronger than they are, pound for pound. But even in absolute terms, I think you probably got most of those guys as well. So, I mean, and I think also just finally on this one, the fact that you're able to kind of recognize the positives, right? So the fact that they're commenting, etc., probably great for the algorithm. You probably picked up followers. It probably benefited your business, even though they're trying to like do the exact opposite. It's actually so misguided that it benefits you.
Well, now when I get like nasty comments, I just say thank you, and they're like confused to my reply. But I literally did that. I forget what clip it was. That it was a bunch of like, you're a dude comments. I just said thank you.
Well, as you said, they probably have no idea how to. They're probably just shocked you even responded, to be honest. I would imagine.
Like, they don't get it. Like, because, you know, people are like, oh, what's your TRT dose? I'm like, well, according to the internet, it's 200 milligrams at least. And I'm also on Tren, and I'm also on Winstrol and D-Ball and all these other things. And I'm actually transitioning too, if you didn't notice. So how about that? Like, and I'm like, honestly, I take like 6 to 8 milligrams a week when I remember to inject. But I'm a dude, so.
Well, I used to have some guy comment on all mine, eat Clen, Tren hard, Anavar give up on like all, everything. And you're like, cool, cheers, thanks for that. That's really useful. So switching gears again, I'd like to talk about kind of testosterone generally. And you deal with a lot of people who will have their testosterone tested, right? So you're quite familiar with labs. And where I'm going with this is relative ranges. So ranges of testosterone. So I remember back when I first started looking into it, so I'm mid-30s now, the range was something in the US was something like 350 to 1200. Now I look, and in some like lab reference ranges, it starts at 150. So, well, I'll just leave that there, and would you care to comment?
I mean, it's like, it's so awful, because you're right, it did start at 350, and now like 350, people are like, oh, my test is high. I'm like, no, it's really not. And they literally have lowered it twice for most lab ranges. And honestly, like, there's different companies that have labs. I don't know why they all have different ranges. Like, it's like, it makes no sense, even by country. How are men as a species physiologically different in the UK, Australia, versus America. Like, it's just so stupid. But now guys can have a testosterone of 200 and be told that they're perfectly fine. And that really drives me crazy. And that's why I try to get them to understand why you don't want to go to a GP or somebody who's not trained in hormone optimization, because they're going to tell you that, because they have to do something about it and they don't really know how. That's not what they're trained for. They're absolutely necessary when we need things, like when we have a cold or some sort of illness or whatever. But when it comes to hormone optimization, you don't want to be going to the same person who handles all that other stuff. So it's important for them to realize that you have symptoms. It doesn't matter what the piece of paper says. So being told that you're normal when you clearly feel awful, I don't know how that helps anybody.
No, and it is a concern that instead of sort of addressing the decline, they just adjust the ranges to fit the decline. Which, yeah. So we're kind of talking around a subject here, but there has been, and I've heard you speak about this, and there's tons of empirical evidence, there's tons of research on this, notably a book called Countdown, which focuses a lot on sperm count and how that's declining. But obviously that has implications for testosterone. It talks about testosterone too. So my first question is, you know, why do we have such a big decline? I think you mentioned that testosterone has declined year on year 1% since 1982. So first off, I mean, what do you attribute this decline to?
A big part of it is the sedentary lifestyle, the fact that we don't move anymore, the fact that people are just not active. They don't do hard things. They don't do hard things that promote muscle growth, like lifting weights. Like it's so much, it's weird to be somebody who lifts weights a lot. And it sounds crazy with the amount of people that we interact with in the fitness industry and people who go to the gym. But if you walk around public places, like in America, people will comment like, oh, do you lift? Or like, you know, do you CrossFit? Do you compete? No, I just live. Like, apparently that's not a good enough answer, because looking like you lift to me should be the norm. But to other people, they're living a whole different norm, which is very unhealthy, highly inflammatory. So again, going back to the inflamed body, if you have a lot of body fat, you're going to have a lot of inflammation. Your body's going to be like, yeah, we're not ready to procreate. It's not a healthy environment for that. So we're going to suppress your testosterone levels. And so over time, with that and the health and the food quality, and it's just like a combination of so many things, that men's levels are going to be dropping. And then if you bring that with the whole social narrative of like, let's suppress all masculinity on earth, cool. Men have no purpose anymore. So they feel lost and they feel like, well, how am I supposed to act? How am I supposed to be? I guess I'm supposed to be more of this passive, meek, weak-minded person, when in fact, it's the complete opposite that we want. And people think like high T is going to cause massive aggression and all this other stuff. And I'm just like, masculinity is not about testosterone levels. It's so much more than that. But of course, we see it as being bad and demonizing it. And men are men. Like, men need to act as men. If you're an asshole, you're an asshole. It doesn't matter if you're on testosterone or not. So it's just so stupid how people think that way. But that's a tangent. And a lot of it has to do with really the quality of the food, people just not getting enough exercise. They think if they go to the gym 3 days a week and they take a 10-minute walk daily, that's enough. I'm sorry, but it's not.
Yeah. So there's so many things I want to pick up on that. And I think you've explained it really well. So the first thing I'd say is this decline. What can we do? I don't want to be all doom and gloom. So, and you've mentioned a lot of the things there, really. But what can we do to not become a statistic and not become, you know, perhaps not succumb to this decline as much? Give me a few sort of quick fire, you know, your kind of tips and ways in which we can combat that.
If you know that you are not in the best shape that you can be, if you know that your health is not in order, take ownership of it, confront it, and fucking do something about it. There are way too many men out there suffering because they've been told XYZ is true, and they've been handed antidepressants and been told that this is going to be the fix, or they blame it on their age and they're like, well, I'm just getting older. No, there are ways to solve this. There are solutions, and it starts with taking ownership of your current situation. You don't want to wait until it's too late. And then you see things on blood work that you don't like, because a lot of guys do that. Like, oh shit, I'm going to die if I don't take care of this. How about you take care of this now? And a saying a lot of people use, especially if you have children, like, you're willing to die for your children, but are you willing to live? Are you willing to live for yourself? Are you willing to live for everybody around you? You have to be selfish in some areas, like, to take care of yourself, because then you show up as the best husband, as the best partner, as the best in your business. It bleeds into all areas of your life. When you take care of your health, you have visible abs, which shouldn't be this crazy goal. It's really not that difficult if you get your act together and realize that it just takes consistent effort repeated over time, not program hopping, not diet hopping, not saying, oh, there's holidays, oh, there's this. There are no excuses for it. It doesn't consider holidays. Abs don't say, oh, okay, it's Christmas, let's, you know, stuff our face for 6 days and then, you know, lay around. No, it's a lifestyle. And as soon as people realize that this is a way to live and it's not a temporary phase in their life, the quicker they're going to just accelerate all of that. And like I said, the positivity of it bleeding into their business and their personal life and everything else, I have seen firsthand. I've seen men transform from very passive, very low confidence and all of that stuff to where they're assertive, the way they speak, the way that they just come across in their whole aura, and they're strong and they fill out their shirts and they have visible abs. Like, who wouldn't think that that is awesome? And you walk in a room and you immediately command respect because of how you look, and you have a solid handshake, and you actually have confidence behind it.
I totally agree. I mean, it's interesting as well, and I'd love to get your take on this, that as testosterone has declined year on year, that we have, you know, this isn't speculation. This is evidence-based.
Yep.
We now have more and more attention on this idea of toxic masculinity. So you'd think that testosterone is increasing, but it's not. I'd love to get your thoughts on that and about that whole phenomenon. I mean, what do you think about, or what do the words toxic masculinity mean to you?
So I think that a part of it is this social narrative that's somewhat made up. Because when I talk to women in person, I'm like, do you want chivalry? Do you want a man to take decisive action? Do you want him to lead? And they all do. So I also have not seen it in real life. Like, in the wild, I've not seen, like, what a toxic male. I don't even know, like, what I would look for. I mean, I guess what they think it is that a guy who is assertive. But then how is that when a woman is assertive and then you call her a bitch? How is that not the same type of thing? So now we're telling young boys that, like, martial arts and stuff like that is not good because it's teaching them how to fight. Okay, cool. So who's going to help fight for you? It may seem twisted, but there are standards that are being lowered. And my business coach, Bedros Koulian, talked about this on a podcast recently. And I was like, wow, that's powerful. Because he was saying, they've lowered standards in things like firefighting and stuff like that because, well, we have to have women as firefighters, which is great. But again, if you talk about the physical differences in stature and you're asking someone maybe of my size, 5'3", 58 kilos, I'm going to be pulling a 250-pound man out of a building. And that may or may not be challenging, but why don't we lower the standard of entry into firefighting so that Allie can pull out a 150-pound man, and that's okay. So now when that actually happens in real life and it goes sideways, then what? There's a reason that men lead, protect, and fight and all this stuff. And people may disagree with me, and that's fine. But I think that being aware of these are actually scientific facts, like, biologically, like, you can't overrule that's what happens. So I don't think it's as prevalent in real life as it is made out to be in media, like many things that have happened in recent years.
It's interesting that, yeah, your kind of, well, your experience doesn't necessarily reflect what, you know, the media would have you believe. I mean, I will say that if I speak to someone on the phone or I'm emailing someone and then I show up and they see me and they see a guy, you know, like a large guy with calluses on his hands and stuff, I'll get treated differently. People seem more wary. And I don't know whether that's, you know, relating to toxic masculinity or whether that's relating to just, you know, appearing more confident or whatever it might be. But I have noticed more of that recently, which is interesting. You know, it's not something I've thought about that much, but I guess in this context, it's relevant. But kind of brings me on to my next point. So Charles Poliquin, people will be familiar with him, but the late great Charles Poliquin used to say that normal is Homer Simpson. Like, you don't want to be normal. And we're kind of seeing that with the reference ranges and, you know, going back to testosterone, we're kind of saying, oh, you're fine. You're normal. Yeah. Okay. Normal and optimal are very, very different things. So, I mean, what would you look for in terms of, so we have these lab ranges, right? So yeah. 150. Oh, you're 155. You're normal. You're fine. You're all good. No problems. Like, what sort of ranges would you look for, or how would you look to optimize things?
I think generally that, again, men will wear their testosterone number like a bench press number, and that's obviously only a part of the puzzle. So I would say if we're going to go with a total number, I would say most guys do well over 500. However, I have seen guys who have symptoms at 600. So what is the free T? What are their other markers looking like? What is their body weight? What is their body fat? What are they doing in the gym? How are they eating? Like, it literally will all relate. So if you have 600 testosterone, but your lifestyle shit, something's going to change really fast, very quickly. And again, you may have 600 total T and then you may have no free T and you feel awful. So there are guys who have 400 to 500 total testosterone. They actually feel good. And there are guys with higher levels and they really don't. So a lot of it's going to be subjective as well as objective. And that has to be taken into consideration. So I'm not somebody who's like, oh, well, this is your total number. Cool. Like, have a good day. You're at 800. You're awesome. You know, I want to know everything about this person. And this is why I love working with Merrick Health so much, because they actually created their own range where they want guys in the higher range. And that way guys aren't dismissed or they feel some type of way for being maybe on the lower end. It's like, no, let's do something about this because you seem to be a candidate due to everything else that you've told us.
So two things on that. First off, what is Merrick's range? I'd be interested to know, like, what if they haven't sort of succumbed to this, just accepting 150 as the range, you know, what does their range run from, just out of interest?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I can pull it up.
And on that, I suppose there are ways that you can improve free T, for example, stuff like, oh, what do you think about things like boron supplementation, high dose zinc, all those kind of things that are supposed to, you know, I know boron has a relationship with reducing sex hormone binding globulin, right? So without getting too technical, are there any kind, and, you know, having more carbohydrates might help, or not training as much? I mean, are there any kind of things that you'd look at immediately to improve that might be quick wins in that respect?
Yes and no. Like, there are a lot of guys that'll take boron and it's, you know, like, it's kind of like taking caffeine. So you're basically throwing a Band-Aid on something that's suboptimal. So caffeine, I have no energy. Why do you have no energy? I don't know. I'm just going to take caffeine. Cool. I have low free T. Why? I don't know. I'm just going to take boron to free up some of it. So why don't we find out why? And side note, Merrick's optimal range is 600 to 1400.
So that's really interesting. So 550, which would be considered, you know, good by some metrics, is actually low within that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, again, it's contextual, but so I tell guys, like, you don't want to be chasing free T. Like, I don't know if it's going to have this overwhelming impact that's going to solve all the issues. Like, if you have low free T, like you said, you know, what are your carb levels? What type of things are you exposed to chemically and stuff like that? But again, there's a lot that goes into it. And then men who are on testosterone, sometimes they need more testosterone if their free T is very low. So But again, that comes with the stigma. Oh, I'm taking 300 milligrams. Like, okay, but if it makes you feel better, like there's guys that take 100 and they feel fine. So, you know, just stop with the numbers, like stop obsessing with the numbers. These guys really obsess and it's crazy. It's not crazy. I don't want to seem insensitive, but it's more like they fixate on things that don't matter so much. Whereas like in the present day, are you actually attacking life in every aspect that you need to? Then everything will come as a byproduct. So I actually had a consult with a guy the other day and he was also a coach and he was trying to hack his sleep, like biohack, like the glasses, the supplements, the meditation, all this stuff. But he wasn't eating and training the way he needed to. His actual calorie amount was way too high for what his body could actually utilize. He was doing zero cardio. And I was like, you just need to train different and eat different and you're going to see your body fat drop. So usually people will say, oh, well, I don't get the best sleep. That's going to help solve all my issues. Obviously, sleep's important, but you know what I found? I used to hyperfixate on it too. Like, oh, we got to fix that before you can train hard. Like, we're that fragile. And I'm like, fuck that. When I fix somebody's ability to train hard and actually the right way that they need to, sleep becomes a byproduct of that. Like, your sleep is going to improve because your health is going to improve and everything else. So trying to flip those and focus on just one thing and then try to biohack your way into health is not necessarily the path to go.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really interesting that, as you said, sleep, and you can become fixated and then become neurotic and then it just perpetuates the problem. But one thing that you've just demonstrated there is you're good at looking at the whole person and you're good at men. And I can say this, you know, like figures, like numbers. And I think perhaps, you know, maybe you have an advantage because you're asking all these overall questions, right? Rather than fixating on a number, because
right,
the number might be important, but it's just one factor among many, right? So another thing I'd like to ask you about, and I suppose this is more of a kind of personal question that I'd be interested in hearing your take on. So I feel embarrassed admitting this to you, but I haven't had a testosterone level. I haven't checked my levels in 7 or 8 years, right? So one thing that, and a lot of my friends, we're all getting to a certain age, you know, we like to think of ourselves as athletes, mid-30s, you know, mid to late 30s, some of them. If you are used to having, so mine was like 932 at one point. If you're used to having a high number, right? And say it's dropped to 532 or 600 even. So even in Merrick's range or 650, whatever it is. Would that decline? So is it like person specific and context specific? Do you see what I mean? If you're used to a certain level and then it drops, does that present more of a problem?
There's a lot of ways to attack this. So say you did blood work tomorrow. And if you went from 932 and you were actually 1100, but you had symptoms, but I told you 1100, is there a placebo effect there? So I think sometimes guys see a drop and then they're like, oh yeah. And all of a sudden they feel way worse than they did. So there's that. Everybody's going to be different as to what they've gone through in life changes. Yeah, I've seen guys go through, like, you know, the biggest things that are like cataclysmic to people are divorce, moving, and I think like any type of life event, like a death or something, you know, losing somebody. Obviously, that's going to impact you because it's going to be hyper stressful. So that might send your test levels down the drain. But if I don't tell you what it is, does that affect? Like, it's kind of like looking at the body fat on a DEXA or in body. Like, if you don't look, will your day be ruined still? Or, you know, so kind of that's
it's how, a really, like, interesting point. Do you ever get people who are like, don't tell me the number, just tell me what's it like? Do you ever get that?
Not testosterone. It's more like they don't want to look at the other stuff. And I'm like, okay, like, I get it. But yeah, nobody who's like, I don't want to know the number, like, you know, they more like realize they need to do something about it if there's a reason to. So
changing gears again, and I'm firing questions at you here.
But I love it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Most people, maybe it's a performance enhancing boost from testosterone. No, I jest. But how do you think about treatment versus enhancement? And I ask a lot of people this question because it's one of my big areas of study. And I suppose I'm thinking, and I don't want to lead you here, but testosterone replacement therapy, right? As we discussed, it's replacing what we should hopefully be producing. But then you're like, oh, so this guy is on, oh, he's on TRT plus or TRT sport plus. Like there are all these little things. And, you know, so first off, I mean, where, and you've alluded to it already that it can be person and context specific, but how do you think of treatment versus enhancement first? These two concepts, because obviously within medicine and within, you know, biomedical ethics and law, treatment, that's very much encouraged. Enhancement, it seems to be, you know, doctors have trouble prescribing if they think it's going to be an enhancement, essentially. So how do you kind of think about that relationship?
So part of it deals with the dosage prescribed, and there is a cap in which prescribers can actually hit legally. Like they can only prescribe it in America, I think it's 400 milligrams. I don't know anyone who's on 400 milligrams. I know guys who are in the 300s and they need that to actually feel good. I think that when they've reached the point where maybe they've had symptom resolution and now they're like, oh, what will happen if I take more? Will I get bigger? Or if I add on other stuff, like we hear a lot of like, what are some TRT add-ons that I can, you know, incorporate? And being in the world of like PEDs, like you and all of that stuff, I don't think we have the same outlook on it as maybe the public does. Public thinks bad, cheating, all that stuff. Obviously, we know people who are on things who are medically monitored and it's managed. And actually, quite a few of these that are now illegal were created for medical purpose. So it's not like, you know, some of these things are not things that were FDA approved at one point. But again, just like anything in America, we're like, oh, 400 milligrams of caffeine, 900 is better. So people are just going to keep adding on to see what effect that has. When it negatively affects your health, then obviously it's a problem. So it's quite the weird gray area because people consider TRT as not natural, but it is a natural hormone. So at what point do we consider it not natural? And this is something Christian Thibodeau and I are talking about in our seminar coming up, where it's like, are you considered natty or not because you're on testosterone replacement? Does that give you an edge? Or is that edge what you should normally be feeling biologically? Like you said, replacing the biological production. So if people add other things that are enhancing, yeah, sorry, but you're not natty. Like now you're fake natty and you're taking things to enhance your appearance. But Rick and I have also discussed this where people doing Botox and other cosmetic procedures, how is that not looked at the same way? Like, if you want to enhance what your muscles look like, is that any different than wanting to enhance the size of your lips or how your face is structured or the size of your boobs or something like that? So it can go so many different directions. And I think that the argument is more that people feel that someone has an edge over them in something, and that drives more of an insecurity because they can't be this or they can't do that or whatever. So I think if like steroids were legalized, maybe people would look at it a little bit different through a different lens. And also if somebody wants to take performance enhancing drugs to look a certain way, why do you care so much?
There's certainly that as well. And they've actually changed it to, in the UK, people now talk instead of PEDs, PIEDs, performance and image enhancing drugs, which is interesting. But as you said, like, I mean, this is, I probably dedicated 40,000 words to this in the PhD, that this concept of enhancement could be anything. Working with you will provide an advantage over doing it on your own. Just working with a coach, right?
Yeah. Is that cheating?
Well, exactly. Right. So it just kind of makes a mockery of some of these distinctions that, you know, they're superficially plausible, but when you actually push on it, it just collapses. So, yeah, I mean, I've spent several years of my life thinking about these sorts of things. So I won't kind of spend too much on it now. But I think two further things on that. People, and you can talk about this, but people should remember that testosterone replacement therapy isn't just a treatment for low testosterone, right? It can have all sorts of other benefits. For example, I've heard you talk about in the context of depression and SSRIs, antidepressants, or in the context of traumatic brain injuries, TBIs. I was wondering if you could kind of explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, we have a lot of veterans who have to deal with when they transition out of the military, the VA who takes care of them, very much behind in the research and evolved approach of testosterone replacement. A lot of these guys get handed a starter pack, similar to a lot of the TRT clinics handing a starter pack, but there's no hormones in it. It's Adderall, Ambien, and then antidepressants. And quite realistically, lots of research that any traumatic brain injury or even PTSD can have a massive suppressive effect on the production of testosterone. A lot of these guys just need hormone replacement, or maybe something they're taking in addition to hormone replacement, but that's never looked at. So that's a huge struggle for them, where even if you've had concussions as a professional athlete and you just never had your hormones looked at. So whenever you interfere with the signal from the brain to the balls, like, that's going to fuck shit up and you have to rectify that. So there are solutions that people can go through to achieve optimizations, but more often than not, they end up on testosterone replacement. So that's secondary hypogonadism. That's where you're disrupting the brain to ball signal. Primary is if there's trauma or something going on with your testicles where you've reached a certain age that they just don't work anymore, or there's trauma there and that's really hard to fix any other way other than putting somebody on testosterone replacement. So that's a big part of it. And a lot of guys are just unaware. They didn't know that they should be tested for their hormone levels and neurotransmitters and all that stuff, because they're like, oh, I'm just depressed, but I'm depressed because I have low T.
So yeah, and that's super interesting. And I'm just thinking about the kind of decline in testosterone that happens, you know, as we age, right? So independent of this sort of decline that's coming from outside due to, you know, our sedentary lifestyles and endocrine disruptors and all those sorts of things that we haven't talked about. But I've heard Dr. John Berardi, the precision nutrition guy, and this might not be his theory, but he's the person that I sort of saw popularize it, essentially, this wise elder theory, that there might actually be some evolutionary advantage in testosterone perhaps declining a little bit, as it does when if someone's partner has just had a baby, for example, the man's testosterone tends to decline for about a year, I believe. Just wondering, you know, what are your thoughts on that sort of thing?
Yeah, I tell guys, like, if their wife's pregnant, I'm like, you're not going to feel amazing for like a year. And I think that's like due to the lack of sleep, in addition to this evolutionary thing of like, keep the man at home, he can't go procreate everywhere else, that type of deal. So they do experience that. It typically bounces back, but again, then they're another year older and they probably are not in the same health situation. Maybe they're better, maybe they're worse. But I think that's something many guys experience. They just don't realize it's happening. They've never been told that too. So they're like, oh shit, that happens. And yeah.
I think, yeah, that's probably a big one. So while we're on this kind of declining testosterone issue, and I suppose I don't want to conflate two things, because there's testosterone declining and then there's sperm count declining. And I'll talk a little bit about that book that we mentioned earlier, Countdown. But do you think, and I'm getting you to speculate here, you know, science fiction type stuff, but if the decline in testosterone and the decline in, you know, the production of sperm levels essentially continues to decline, you know, are we going to be at a point where testosterone replacement therapy is given to a boy at 12 or 13, you know, in some dystopian future in 50 or 100 years time? I mean, I'd love to get your thoughts on that kind of thing, because I don't think we'll hear that anywhere else.
There's already guys in their 20s on testosterone because they actually do need it because of reasons of not being exposed to androgens in the womb and all of that stuff. So I don't see why we're not headed that direction. Basically, like, you know, in Countdown, we're headed for extinction of the male species. So I don't know why it wouldn't be more of the solution to that, to provide testosterone to guys who literally are not producing it due to some of those evolutionary and physiological factors.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a scary thought, really, isn't it? To see that decline continue. I mean, what do you think? Like, if we take this decline and we keep following it, do you think you're going to see men younger and younger then? Like, what, I mean, I don't want you to betray any confidences or, you know, anything like that. But what's the sort of youngest person that you've seen with issues like this?
Personally, 26, but I have colleagues, my friend Dave Lee, who works with a lot of men in their early 20s. He sees guys all the time with issues. And I hear about a lot of kids who, like 16-year-olds and SARMs and taking TRT and stuff like that. That's not my world. I don't work with a lot of teenagers or any actually right now. So
fair enough.
I have no reason to think that we're not headed there though.
And there was one thing that I think you posted, or you certainly referred to it, which is kind of why I asked the question as well, that the evolution of male kind of bodies and physiques and the projections for that over the next 40 years. And there's quite a compelling image, as I understand it. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that.
I should post that as a reel today. That'd be really good.
Definitely do. That'd be great.
I forget where I got it off Google.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I forget what I was looking up, but basically in 2040, the male physique is like a teenage girl. That's a problem.
Yeah. Wow. So that's, yeah. And as you said, I think the image says it all, really. It's worth 1,000 words. So yeah, I'd encourage people to, do you know what you Google to get that? Because I mean, or we can link it potentially. But
No, I'll send it to you. I have it in PowerPoint talks and stuff. I'll send it to you, or I'll post it today and then send it to you too.
Well, thanks, Ali. I really appreciate your time, and you've been super generous with it. So just a couple of kind of final wrap-up questions. Is there anything that I've neglected to ask, or anything that you wish I'd asked that I haven't?
I think we covered everything, actually. I don't know.
We covered a lot, right?
Yeah.
It was pretty information dense. Okay, cool. Well, so moving on, people are going to want to find out kind of more about you, more about your work, what you do. I would also encourage them to follow you on social media because it's entertaining and you have the coolest dog. So how can people find out more about you? Where would you direct them to, essentially?
Come to Instagram. That's literally where all my content is and where I spend my most time, at the Ali Gilbert, A-L-I. Slide in the DMs. The link on my bio links to everything we talked about today, Silverback Summit, GPP for TRT, as well as applications for coaching with myself and my team. So that's really the easiest place to find me.
And it's also the Silverback Summit as well?
Yep.
Is there a website for that? We can
SilverbackSummit.com. Yeah, we'll be updating that for an interest list for next year too.
Thank you for listening to the Unfiltered Podcast. If you've got this far, I hope you won't mind if I ask you to leave a 5-star review when you get the chance. We'd really appreciate it. And don't forget, you can access all of our exclusive Unfiltered video interviews and features at unfilteredonline.com and the Unfiltered Extra YouTube channel. See you next time.